Our case is called The Gold Cobra. It comes to us from Philip Marlowe, who held forth on the radio from 1947 to 1951, and this is right smack in the middle, well, toward the end, let's say, of that run. Features a client and a cobra on the loose, and a loose snake was always a good plot device for radio somehow. Tonight, meet Mordecai Ziff and Bertie the Cobra. Not to mention Philip Marlowe, of course, in this story from June 21st, 1950.
Get this and get it straight. Crime is a sucker's road, and those who travel it wind up in the gutter, the prison, or the grave. There's no other end, but they never learn.
Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, the refreshing, delicious treat that gives you chewing enjoyment, presents for your listening enjoyment Raymond Chandler's most famous character in The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Here's a taste treat you can enjoy indoors, outdoors, at work, or at play. The cool, long-lasting mint flavor refreshes you. The smooth, steady chewing helps keep you fresh and alert. Adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Healthful, refreshing, delicious. Now with Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum, we're glad to bring you tonight's exciting story, The Gold Cobra.
My mama done told me that I know that he done.
History. I'm Marlowe.
Hiya, kid.
Get up while it's hot. Take the seventh race. Moving Walker.
Hey, mister. Could you please help a blind man? Could you let me have a buck for my first square meal in a week?
You mean your first shot in an hour, don't you, Jake?
Huh? Oh, Mr. Marlowe, hi.
How are you?
Sorry I didn't recognize you. Must be these dark cheaters.
Yeah, must be. How's business, Jake?
Oh, I seen better. You too, huh?
Yeah, sure.
You just fit for the fresh air, maybe.
No, I...
Oh, no, don't tell me. That ain't it. I got it.
Huh?
You're making a rendezvous, a secret meeting, huh?
No, Jake, I'm just waiting for you.
Holy catfish! Look at that jerk out in the middle of traffic. The guy with the suitcase. Getting out of that cab right in the middle of the street. Hey, he's coming this way.
And he acts like the guy I'm waiting for, suitcase and all. Here, Jake, here's the starter on that meal. I'll see you. Goodbye.
I got you. So long, Mr. Marlowe. Thanks a million.
Sir, tell me quickly. You're Mr. Marlowe, Philip Marlowe?
That's right, you're Roth Wingham.
Correct. Mr. Marlowe, is your car nearby?
Yeah, right over there.
Good. Now, Mr. Marlowe, we've got to get out of here. My very life may be in danger. And have you been seen with me, sir? Yours as well. Quickly, Mr. Marlowe. We must be off.
Yeah. Well, this way, Mr. Wingham. My new client was right out of Charles Dickens. But I bit my lip and tried to play it straight. We piled into my car and took off. Mr. Wickham, his owl eyes glued to the rear window, watched and worried hard about what... But finally, he was convinced that we were safe. He relaxed his grip on the suitcase and fumbled for a cigarette. Roth Wickham was maybe 50 and had a large, bald head on a small, well-dressed body that just couldn't sit still. Also, it was at least 3-1 that the gentleman had ulcers. He was the type.
Keep driving, please, Mr. Marlowe, and do watch the rearview mirror.
Okay.
Now, sir, what exactly did I say to you on the telephone?
Well, you wanted me to fly to Chicago tonight with a suitcase that contained an item worth $20,000, which was earmarked for some museum, right?
Oh, yes, the Ashwell Museum.
Yeah, and you said something about an eccentric here in L.A. who owned the item. That's about all I caught. That and the fact that you were very worried.
And I still am. Now, first, Mr. Marlowe, a word about the man who was
first, found... Mr. Wickham, a word or two about the item itself, huh? You know, I can't afford to play carrier pigeon without so much as a peek. It's too much like leading with my chin. Now, what is it?
A gold cobra.
A gold what?
A cobra. A snake, sir. Made of 250 separate links, each some 2 inches in diameter and each solid gold.
Links, huh? That makes the snake flexible like the real thing, is that it?
Yeah, precisely. And the cobra's hood, Mr. Marlowe, is spangled.
Oh?
The Originally, the object was a ceremonial piece. It comes from India, from a kingdom that no longer exists. Mordecai Ziff bought it there several years ago.
Mordecai Ziff,
Yes.
He's the eccentric who lives here in L.A.?
But perhaps intellectual is more the proper term.
Oh.
He lives near here in the Hollywood Hills. And he is the one who is presenting the cobra to the museum.
I see. Well, tell me, what's your connection, Mr. Wickham?
I am a friend, Mr. Marlowe. Mordecai and I studied together in Europe many years ago.
Really?
We have remained fast companions through the years. And now that his health is failing, he is a man of 60. I wish very strong to repay his kindnesses. But I need your help to do it.
Yeah, well, that brings us to the party following you. Who's that?
A creature named Akbar, Mr.
Akbar?
Marlowe. Yes. He's an East Indian, and he wants the cobra. Badly. That's all I know of him, except, sir, that he has no claim, morally or legally. He's merely a fanatic.
Yeah, well, that's not to be sneered at. It's a full-time job. Tell me, what does this Akbar look like?
Well, he's thin, he's dark-skinned, dark hair, vicious, cold eyes. You'll have to be on the other... Mr. Marlowe, behind us, sir, that taxicab. We're being followed. Drive, sir!
You see who it is?
No, but it could be Akbar. Try to lose him.
That's exactly what I'm trying to do. The cobra's in the suitcase here, right?
No. This suitcase is empty.
Oh?
A decoy. The gold cobra is in a similar bag that has been checked at the Beachwood Plaza Hotel. Turn again, Mr. Marlowe. The cab is gaining.
Right.
Now, sir, this envelope contains the claim check for the bag, as well as your airline ticket to Chicago. Also, there's a $100 bill in good.
Oh.
And you'll get another one when we meet tomorrow night in Chicago. I'll look for you at the Dearborn Street station at 8 o'clock. He's still with us, Mr. Marlowe.
Yeah, and that's a red light ahead. We can't slip through.
Then it's time for me to go. And time for Akbar to follow me. Me and the empty bag. Good luck, Mr. Marlowe. I'm counting on you, sir.
By the time the light had changed, the spry Roth Wickham had already made it to the sidewalk, the empty suitcase conspicuously in hand. And when my rear-view mirror showed the cab had given up the chase, I figured the quantity known as Akbar had taken the bait and followed Wickham. All of which made my next stop the check room at the Beachwood Plaza Hotel.
Yes, sir, what'll it... Well, hello. Can I be of some assistance, Nick?
I wouldn't be surprised. But at the moment, I just want my suitcase. Here, honey, it's a black bag.
A black bag?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Oh, here we are. Number 4511. Number 4511. Comes out even. Maybe yours are right.
Yeah, it must be. Thanks, baby. Here. Small token of my Oh.
What's the matter, Hanson? Your wife just waltzed in?
No wife. Just trouble. Goodbye, princess. My first glance at the man standing in the hotel entrance was almost enough. A lot of people could have jet black unruly hair on top of a flyweight build, but very few people had that kind of wild, sparkling eyes. They were reserved for fanatics named Akbar. When he spotted me and started coming in a hurry, it was time for me and the suitcase to head for the nearest exit. I took a side door just beyond the check room, and from there ran the length of the narrow, twisting corridor that led to the rear of the hotel, and out to the alley where I'd parked my car. There I ducked behind a pile of trash cans, slipped my hand over the .38 in my shoulder holster, and waited. But after a full minute went by, I figured that it was safe to go to my car. And it would have been, if the striking redhead crouched on the seat inside hadn't been holding an also striking pistol. Just made for ladies.
Don't bother getting in the car, Mr. Marlowe. In fact, don't do anything but hand over that suitcase. Here, on the seat.
Your mind's made up, huh?
Definitely. And keep your hands at your sides. Now, let me have those keys you're holding. Come on, toss them here.
Yeah.
Now, turn around. Thank you. I'm glad you're cooperative.
Don't mention it. Your winning smile. Anything else?
Yes. Walk in the direction you're facing. Go on.
Walk it is, baby. But first, tell me, who do I see for my car?
Don't worry. It'll be returned safe and sound.
Yeah, what about the suitcase? It's got all the clothes I have in it.
Oh, sure. You look so fetching in gold cobra, don't you? Good night, Mr. Marlowe.
The shock of fire red hair gunned my car the length of the alley and then swerved on two wheels into the busy street beyond and was gone. I followed to the end of the alley and started walking toward the hotel. And I saw something else. It was Akbar running toward a hack stand. He had also seen my car disappear, and that obviously meant that he wanted the first cab in line to take him someplace in a hurry. But the driver was waiting for a fare, which forced him to the only other cab in line, and almost gave me time to get to it. Almost. But not quite. That left only an outside chance that Akbar had tossed an address to the driver before he knew that the cab was taken. Yeah, but it was an outside chance that paid off.
Yeah, sure, you give me an address, pal. You know, I had the flag down. I got an old doll inside.
Friend, this counts. What was that address? Come on, the right answer's worth 10 to you.
A saw?
The same. Here.
Well, now,
all right, what was it?
Let me think, pal.
Now, hold on, come on.
I got it. Outpost Road, number 818, I think. Yeah, 818 Outpost Road.
818, Hollywood Hills, huh?
You, someone up there you know, pal?
Yeah, it could be. Get moving. 818 Outpost Road.
But pal, I already told
you. Heard you. There's another 10 in it, and let's forget the old doll. Come on, bust the roll.
Corner mansion there is 800 outposts, so this next job must be it. Whew. Looks like the Taj Mahal joint.
Yeah. That plus enough grounds to build a ballpark, grandstand included. I'll get out here, take the driveway on foot.
Okay, pal, whatever you say. Hey, you want me to wait?
Yeah, you better. No, I think I see my own car up there. Here's the 10, thanks.
Okay, pal. So long. Hey, give my love to the Roger, huh?
Brother, what a backdrop for a harem. 50 beautiful girls, 50.
Kindly stand just where you are. This rifle is loaded and the safety not on.
It was hard to believe. At the top, a genuine African pith helmet, and under that, a pudgy cherubic smiling face with red roses for cheeks and dimples, an inch deep. And the rest fit, too. A round little body dressed in a khaki shirt, riding breeches and polished leather boots. Happy of the seven dwarfs and jungle get-up. But there the individualism ended, because like everybody else I'd met tonight, his interest was in the cobra, exclusively.
Now, Mr. Whoever you are, where is that snake?
Have you tried the grass? I understand snakes love it.
This is not the time to jest. There's nothing funny about that cobra.
Not unless $20,000 happen to tickle your funny bone.
For the last time, where is the cobra? The truth.
Okay. The truth. Frankly, my friend, I haven't the slightest idea. Honest, I haven't. Happy folded up on one punch like it was built on hinges. I headed for the Taj Mahal on a run. But when I was past my car and had gone the slippery length of a tiled porch that led to a pair of half-open etched glass doors, I slowed to a walk at the sight of a single light that came from a beaded lamp in a room inside. And I came to a full stop. The room was about the size of a basketball court with plush decor that was strictly Far East. An elderly man wearing a bright yellow satin robe and also bright yellow satin turban was stretched out, glassy eyes staring at the ceiling. The front of his robe an ugly blood stain. Beside him was the lady with the red hair. And next to her, the suitcase that wouldn't stay put. It was a good time for me and my 38 to announce ourselves. Well, this certainly outclasses the alley, doesn't it, Red?
What?
And now it's your turn to keep your hands at your sides.
What do you want here, Marlowe?
You kill him?
No. Oh, no, I didn't. Believe me, I didn't. I hated Mordecai as if, but I wouldn't do this.
No, of course not. How could I even think of it? You only stick up people in alleys, steal cars, walk off with gold lucky pieces worth 20 grand or better, huh?
No, I didn't do this. My gun hasn't even been fired. Here, look.
Don't try it, Red. I'll look when I'm ready. First, I want to make sure the gold cobra is still intact.
Of course it is. I never let it out of my hand.
We'll see. Stay right where you are, baby. Don't move. I can unlock this with one hand and cover you with the other. Okay. Now we'll know if the cobra's...
Look out!
Marlowe, it's real, a cobra!
Steady, Red, don't move! No! Oh, baby, you shouldn't have killed the lights. That makes the next move the cobra's... And my gun's worthless.
To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The lively, full-bodied, real mint flavor cools your mouth, moistens your throat, freshens your taste. And the chewing itself gives you a little lift, helps you keep going at your best. So for real chewing enjoyment that's refreshing and long-lasting, always keep Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. Healthful, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Gum will make every day more enjoyable. Our Gerald Moore, the second act of Marlowe and tonight's exciting story, The Gold Cobra.
We got one good look at a live cobra rearing up out of the suitcase, its hood distended, flicking its glossy, forked tongue, before the only lamp in the room shattered on the floor in a blue flash, and total darkness surged in. For an endless moment, there was silence, as soft and thick as black velvet. Then we heard it. The snake was moving. We listened to it crawl slowly out of the suitcase, ease itself across the table, and slither to the floor.
Marlo, it's coming toward us.
Stand still, baby. Freeze. Don't move a muscle.
I can't do it, Marlo.
Only chance. Do you hear me? No matter what happens, don't move.
Marlo, I'm getting dizzy. I'm
Hold
afraid
on.
I'm going to pass.
No, baby. Hang on. I tell you. Now, Red, listen to me. Listen to me. Talk. Start talking. Don't stop. But talk softly.
I...
Who are you, Red? Tell me. What's your real name? Tell me.
Abby. Abigail Seabrook.
All right, who killed Ziff, Abby? Who was it? Come on, answer me. Keep talking.
I don't know, Marlo. I told you the truth.
Why did you come here to Ziff's place?
He swindled my Aunt Marcelle out of all her money before she died.
Yeah, go ahead.
Money that was supposed to come to me.
Swindled her how?
He was a mentalist.
Yeah.
A fake mind reader and fortune teller. He told her lies that made her keep giving him money until there was nothing left.
Hey, girl, keep it up, baby, keep it up. Why did you take that suitcase away from me at the hotel? Answer me, Abby, think. Come on.
I spied on Ziff. I found out about the gold cobra.
Yeah, go ahead.
I knew if I went to cut my hands on it, I could force Ziff to return the money he tricked my aunt out.
Keep talking.
Oh, Marlo, I can't. I can't stand it at all.
Quiet. Listen.
There's someone in here.
Yeah. Who's there? Who is it?
No!
He made it out the door.
The cobra struck at him, Marlo.
It sounded like it was clear across the room from us. Now, look, Abby, stay where you are. Don't move. I'm going to see if I can find a light switch on the wall behind us. Stand real still, Abby. You hear anything?
No. Oh, hurry, Marlo, please.
Believe me, baby, I am. Switch here someplace. There's got to be a switch. Yeah, here it is.
Thank heaven, light again.
Where's that cobra?
I don't see it, Marlo.
We'd better spot it. That thing's loaded with sudden death.
But it's not here, I tell you. It's gone, Marlo. It's gone.
Yeah, I guess you're right, for the time being. But in case it comes back, you better keep that gun handy.
Where are you going?
After the guy who beat it through that door. Right now, it pays to be ahead of the game. But not too far ahead, Abby, do you understand?
Oh, yes. At this point, mister, I'll do anything you say.
All right, then wait here for me. And keep your eyes open wide. This cobra's not the only killer loose in this joint. The door opened into a long passageway that offered as much chance to duck for cover as the inside of a loaded cannon barrel. And it was so narrow that if the cobra had found its way out there, it would be within kissing distance when we passed. The hair on my neck remained at rigid attention while I edged along the hall toward a dim light at the end that came from a heavily draped green waiting room. In the center, facing halfway from me, was Akbar, the tousle-haired East Indian. His face was even grayer than before, and his hand trembled as he mopped his glistening forehead with a silk handkerchief. When I stepped in, he saw me from the corner of his eye. His face went stony. Only his right hand moved. It dived under his jacket for a weapon, but I brought my gun down hard on the point of his shoulder. His arm went limp, and a knife as wicked as the back end of a scorpion bounced across the floor.
Doc,
You'll pay for this interference.
Out on the installment plan, Buster. We're going to settle up right now. How come the live cobra in the suitcase you're so anxious about?
A fiendish trick.
And in the dark, it almost caught you, didn't it?
True, but Fortune smiled and the cobra missed.
Yeah, but Fortune's a fickle lady, Buster. Come on, talk it out. Just what are you trying to promote?
The return of this sacred gold cobra to its rightful place. The temple of my ancestors in India. The blasphemy perpetrated by Mordecai Ziff will end only in the restoration of the gold cobra. And I am prepared to do whatever I must do to accomplish this. Even to paying money for it.
Or killing?
Or killing. Death is transitory and therefore inconsequential.
Well, the Homicide Bureau has other ideas, Elephant Boy. So maybe we better just... I hate to leave you alone, Akbar, but you're better off in a long run. I watched just long enough to see Akbar melt toward the floor. Then I ran back along the narrow corridor to where I'd left Abby. When I stepped in the door, I stopped cold. She was facing me from across the room, her eyes wide with fear, her mouth still twisted from a scream. Directly behind her was an opening in what should have been a blank wall, and inside it, staring out with fixed hypnotic eyes, was a coiled cobra. Only this one was solid, gleaming gold. I started toward Abby, but I stopped again because there was a gun in my back.
That's quite far enough, Marlowe.
Roth Wickham. What is this?
You aren't going to like it, Marlowe, not one bit. Give me your gun. Give it to me.
Get it yourself.
I wanted to warn you, Marlowe, but he said he'd shoot me. He took my gun, too.
Come on, Wickham, why the switch?
Believe me, Marlowe, when I hired you tonight, I expected a much less bizarre ending to all this. I intended you to be peacefully on your way to Chicago by now, with the gold cobra safely in tow.
Still just a favor for a friend, huh?
Not exactly. That part was a small lie. Mordecai Ziff was my partner.
Your partner?
Yes, my dear. When we felt it was time to move east again, I decided to break away from Mordecai and keep the gold cobra for myself. Alone. But I needed help.
Because a fanatic named Akbar turned up who had his eye on the cobra, too?
Get over into that empty car, both of you. Go on, get over there. Move.
Take it easy.
No tricks with the partner, Marlowe.
You shoved him into...
Never mind. Leave that vase alone. Get back in the corner.
So it was you who killed Ziff, huh?
I hated him. For every one of a million indignities I've suffered at his hands. As soon as I was sure you'd picked up the gold cobra, I came back here. And I killed him. I just finished it when
I got here.
Yes, young lady. I didn't know about you. But I managed to get out of here before you blundered in with that empty suitcase.
Empty suitcase? That's what you think.
That's what I mean. There on the table, empty. As it has been from the outset. Just as empty as the decoy I used. Obviously, Mordecai suspected my intentions to steal the gold cobra after all.
It was a bit more than that, Wink, I'm honest. Oh, what a cozy pair of chums you and Ziff must have been. You really don't know what he put in that bag, do you?
What are you talking about?
Ziff had a surprise all set for you, Winkum. It was...
Marlowe, look! The snake is coming out of that vase.
Holy smoke, Wickham, there's a live cobra behind you.
I don't blame you.
Listen to me, will you?
Marlowe. Oh, that's such an old stunt. Stay back.
Marlowe, it's...
Wickham, kill it, I tell you. It's right behind
you. Stop it. You're only wasting time. No, don't. I'm bitten.
Oh, no.
He's out and it's no help, baby. That thing's still between us and his gun. Get behind me. Back in the corner.
Oh, Marlowe, we're trapped. We can't get past it.
Get
Marlowe.
Back, will you? Maybe I can throw my coat over it long enough.
Hey, anybody here? What's the matter?
Oh, it's the jerk in the pith helmet. Hey, you! Over here!
What in the world's going on, anyway?
Get over here with that rifle, will you? Hurry!
What's the meaning of all this?
Bertie! Good heavens, my coat!
Shut up, will you? Shoot!
Quiet. You're in a spot, folks.
No fooling.
She's got you within striking distance, so don't move. Just stand still. Very still. Come on, Birdie. Birdie, now. Come on. Take a look at the end of the rifle, Birdie. See the hole? That's it in the end. Fascinates you, doesn't it? Steady, folks, don't move. Keep looking at the little hole in the rifle, Birdie. That's right. Now back up. Back up. That's the way. Into the sack, Birdie. Little more. Now put your head in like a good girl.
Ha! That does it. Now we've got you safe and sound in the sack.
Oh. Whoever you are, brother, you're a genius.
Crumpler's the name, oldest Crumpler. Snakes are my business.
Most amazing thing I've ever seen.
Yes. The most amazing thing.
Oh. Abby. Abby.
Why, she's fainted. Well, what's wrong? Was she bitten?
No. But I know what she means. Look, if you don't mind, Crumpler, I think I'll sit down myself. Right here. Well, when the police finally moved in, they gave the degenerate Taj Mahal a long once-over, and then we adjourned for more questions and answers to the hospital where Abby Seberg was getting a nerve back and Akbar was nursing the split scalp I'd given him. And while Otis Crumpler and I waited for the word downstairs in the coffee shop, Roth Winkham, my client, was busy dying of cobra venom in spite of Crumpler's best efforts.
Well, that's the way it is with cobras, Mr. Marlowe. Sometimes there's just nothing you can do. Sugar?
No, thanks. He had it coming, Otis.
Well, both of them did. Mordecai Ziff was a slimy sort, too. Now, he'd been snooping around my snake farm for several days.
Oh?
And then tonight, when Bertie turned up missing from a cage, I just knew that he was behind it some way. But I couldn't figure why anybody wanted to steal a cobra. You know what I mean?
Yeah, vaguely.
Bill, guess what?
What? Oh, Abigail Seberg is well enough for coffee. Sit down.
Oh, it's better than that. The police think there's a good chance that Akbar will be able to buy the gold cobra and I will get the money. How do you like that?
I like it fine. Where are we going to spend it?
Oh, well, I know a certain kind of snake bite remedy I'd like to try right now. I think we deserve it, mister. It comes in bottles and they call it scotch.
Oh, no, not whiskey.
Oh,
not for snake bite. Oh, no.
No.
Oh, that's the very worst thing you could do. You see, it stimulates the heart and makes the blood go faster. And that...
And that, Mr. Crumpler, is exactly the idea. Come on, Phil.
You know, there are many things that can lead to romance. Usually it's moonlight. Sometimes it's a bit of a song. Whoever heard of a snake playing Cupid? Yeah, well, there was a snake in the Garden of Eden. Yeah, but come to think of it, he kicked up quite a fuss.
Bill?
Hmm?
What are you thinking?
Snakes. What are you thinking?
Apples.
Remember, friends, to make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. There's lots of cooling, real mint flavor in every stick. And chewing Wrigley's Spearmint helps you keep feeling fresh and alert. You feel better, work better, get more fun out of doing things. So indoors, outdoors, wherever you go, keep some healthful, refreshing Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum handy. To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, presented by Wrigley's Spearmint Gum, bring you Raymond Chandler's most famous character and star, Gerald Moore. Philip Marlowe is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and written for radio by Robert Mitchell and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Howard McNear, Lynn Allen, Wilms Herbert, Lou Krugman, Bill Lally, and Michael Ann Barrett. The special music is composed and conducted by Richard Arant. The makers of Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum hope you enjoyed tonight's adventure of Philip Marlowe and that you're enjoying Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day. We invite you to be with us next week when Philip Marlowe says...
This time I caught a killer on a lonely pelican's roost. It took a fistfight on the sidewalk, a flyweight drummer with an ice pick in his back, and a vicious meeting on a yacht to do it. That plus the color of a girl's hair.
This is Bob Stevenson speaking, and this is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
A story about a gold cobra and some other shenanigans in an adventure of Philip Marlowe from June 21st, 1950. Well, we'll tone it down a little bit with the always nocturnal Nightbeat. In a moment, you're listening to Old Time Radio Drama. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tonight, Randy Stone, who made a profession, in fact, of walking into troubles, the troubles of others usually, settles a quarrel between a cabbie and an old painter named Alfred, a painter who has a particular agenda and also a cause, the cause of another painter by the name of Vincent. Well, it's an intriguing canvas painted here in sound by Nightbeat, Vincent and the Painter, from June 19th, 1950.
This is Randy Stone. I cover the Night Beat for the Chicago Star. My stories start in many different ways. This one began with an old man's fury and ended with the murder of a dream.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
It was one of those half-spring, half-winter nights. Tried to convince myself that the tingling in my toes was youth on the march, but it was only the stone corpuscle slowing up. So I'd almost decided to go back to the office and do a human interest story on the H-bomb when I noticed where I was. It was on one of those streets lined with cheap tenements. In front of one of them, a taxi stood at the curb. The driver was shaking his finger under the nose of an old man who shivered in his shirt sleeves. I moved closer.
I tell you, ain't going no place, Pop. You run a bill of 6 bits. It's on the meter.
But I will pay you as soon as I can.
Sure, sure. 10 to 1, you ain't seen 6 bits in the last year.
But you must take me to where I want to go. You must.
You ain't getting back in my hack.
But you've got to take me. I am going to get...
Okay, I asked you nice.
Hey, come on, take it easy, both of you.
This ain't none of your business, mister.
I heard you arguing.
Please, it's getting late. I've got to go.
He ain't going in my cab.
Why not? What'd he do?
Now, look. Since you stuck your nose in, okay, I'll tell you. He gives me a call when I'm cruising. I pick him up. He gives me an address. I get almost there, and he tells me to come here. Here.
Well, what's wrong with here?
Mister, look at this crummy joint. Look at the guy. No hat, no coat. He gets out, I ask for the 6 bits, and find out he's got no dough.
Oh? Is that right?
Yeah, but he will get paid. I will get some money.
Sure, he'll win a sweepstakes, but I can't wait.
Here. Here's your money.
You paying for it?
Yeah, I'll pay for it. That make everything all right?
I will give it back to you someday. I'll give it back. But don't let the driver
go. Pop, I got news for you. I'm practically in St. Louis. He's all yours, mister. You paid 6 bits for him.
No. Make him wait.
Take it easy, Pop. Come on. Settle down.
He's gone and I didn't do it.
You live here?
Yeah, I had to come back for something.
Well, look, we better get you to your room. It's cold. You got no coat.
But I have to go. You see, I must kill Miss Gleason.
That's what he said. He had to kill Miss Gleason. But somehow I couldn't take him seriously. He looked too gentle and too human. Anyway, he let me take him up 4 flights to an attic room. He opened the door and he turned on the light. He hesitated for a moment, and then
I'm sorry there's no chair. That is one you can use.
Oh, forget it, Bob. Fine. You got a lot of stuff in here.
Yeah.
Paints, brushes, canvas, they're yours?
Well, yeah. You see, I paint.
Oh, an artist?
No, I'm afraid I'm not worthy of being called that.
But you did all these paintings.
Oh, yeah. Every one? Mm-hmm.
Ever sell any of them?
No.
Oh, I see.
No, you don't. I didn't paint them to sell. Painting became the only way I could speak. The world is not a very nice place sometimes. But I could change that by a bit of color. The stroke of the brush, the...
Gone.
Yeah. I'm not mad, am I?
Well, that depends on how we define madness, Mr.
Weimann, Alfred Weimann.
Spent a lot of money on all this, Mr. Weimann.
Every penny.
And you didn't have 75 cents for that cab?
I would have paid him. He could have had a picture. Look, you take one. Here's one I finished just last night.
Well, I...
Do you like it?
Well, I'm no judge of art.
But you must be. You are the only person who has never laughed. Not like Miss Gleason.
Oh, yes, Miss Gleason. You remember what you said downstairs?
Yeah.
I don't think you meant it.
I did. Then, don't you see, Mr.
Stone, Randy Stone. Oh. Go ahead, what were you going
to
say?
I wanted to punish her. She had me discharged because I knew what she did. Only I knew it, Mr. Stone.
And what did she do?
She killed Vincent.
What's that?
I know she did. She killed him and put him in the basement.
What are you talking about?
That is why I wanted to kill her.
Why didn't you go to the police?
The one would take my word against hers. Look at me.
Where is she now?
Her home. I was going there.
To kill her?
Yeah.
Where does she live?
Why?
Well, I'd like to talk to her.
You don't believe me, do you?
Well, I'd like to get a few things straight.
No, please believe me. She killed Vincent. She'll say she didn't. But I know.
All right, Pop. All right. Now, if I go to see her, you've got to promise me you'll stay here until I get back.
Yeah. I will wait.
All right, fine. Now, give me her address. Why didn't I go to the police? Well, with what? Wyman's story? I don't think I believed him then. But funnier things have happened to me, maybe because I looked for them. A half hour later, the clerk in a very shishy apartment hotel sent my name up with the urgent tag on it and the fact that I was from the Star. Yes, Miss Gleason would see me. And did.
Mr. Stone, may I see your credentials?
Why, sure. There you are.
I see. Just why are you here?
I told you. About Vincent.
I don't know of Vincent. And I...
Ever know anyone named Alfred Weimann?
Alfred Weimann?
Yeah, that's the name.
What has he got to do with this?
Everything. He told me about Vincent.
Why, he's mad. A lunatic.
Is he? Miss Gleason, when I first saw him, he was on his way here.
Here? He was coming here.
That's right. Now maybe you'd like to talk about Vincent?
Suppose you talk about him, Mr. Stone. You seem to know all about it. Wyman told you, didn't he?
Hmm. You're a very cool person, Miss Gleason.
Do I have any reason to become hysterical?
Well, some people would think murder was reason enough.
You said murder?
Yeah.
Just exactly what did Wyman tell you?
That you killed Vincent.
And did he tell you what became of Vincent?
Yeah. You, put him in the basement.
And now that you have all the facts, what do you intend to do about it?
Well, call the police.
Oh, of course. That's the logical thing to do, isn't it? But, Mr. Stone, there's the phone. Call the police.
You seem very sure that I won't.
Go ahead.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, before you're connected.
Yeah.
Have you thought that all this may make you look ridiculous?
Meaning what, Miss Gleason?
Put down the phone, please, for a moment.
Now what?
Since you seem to have concerned yourself with this, you may as well continue. If you want to, that is. Do you?
What's on your mind, Miss Gleason?
I want you to come with me.
Where?
Are you afraid, Mr. Stone?
Of what?
Maybe of what you'll find out.
And now back to Nightbeat and Randy Stone.
It was a strange ride in the cab with Miss Gleason. She watched me with a peculiar little smile on her face as though she were amused at a joke. There was no concern at all, just an icy coldness and a confidence that disturbed me. Then the cab pulled up in front of the address Miss Gleason had given. We got out and walked up a flight of marble stairs.
Surprised at coming here, Mr. Stone?
Bender Art Galleries.
There's a night bell there. Ring it. Night watchman will be here in a moment.
Well, what do we do here?
You want to see Vincent? Very well. Here's the watchman. It's Miss Gleason, Charles. Open the door, please.
You forgot something, Miss Gleason?
No, Charles.
Anything I can do, Miss Gleason?
This gentleman and I are going to the basement.
Basement?
Yes. Please turn on the lights down there.
Sure, Miss Gleason. They'll be on by the time you get there.
Thank you. Oh, Charles!
Yes, sir?
As soon as you turn them on, come into the basement.
Right away, Miss Gleason.
Well, Mrs. Stone? Coming?
You first, Miss Gleason.
Certainly. This way. Lights are on. Shall I go first, Mr. Stone?
I insist, Miss Gleason.
Everything all right, Miss Gleason?
Yes, Charles. Quite all right. Come along, Mr. Stone.
The
stairs are kind of steep, mister. You're not used to them. You could fall.
I'll sort of watch my step.
You want me to stay, Miss Gleason?
For a moment, Charles. Well, Mr. Stone, what do you see?
The basement.
Anything else?
No, nothing.
You're not looking in the right place, Mr. Stone. Over there to your left, on the floor.
What is all this?
Leaning against the wall.
That picture?
Go over and look at it. Can you read the signature on it?
It's a print.
A cheap print. But read the signature.
Vincent Van Gogh.
All right, Charles. That'll be all, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Miss Gleason.
Now, Mr. Stone, do you realize how big a fool you'd have made of yourself if you'd called the police?
This is Vincent?
That is Vincent.
Why didn't you tell me before?
I wanted you to see it with your own eyes. You took Wyman's word against mine, believed him. I wanted to make you look and feel as ridiculous as this whole idiotic thing is. Now, good night, Mr. Stone.
I don't think so.
What?
He said you had him discharged, did you?
Yes.
Why? What's this Van Gogh print got to do with it?
He'd become a nuisance, an old fool.
All I saw was a pathetic old man.
Get out of here.
First, tell me why Wyman was fired.
He was a guard here. It was his job to see that people kept their hands off the paintings. But he'd become a nuisance. Yesterday, I happened to go into one of the rooms. Wyman was there, speaking to one of the customers. A thing he had absolutely no right to do.
No, please don't buy it, Mr. Evans. It is not good. It is cheap and tawdry. Look at the tricks he uses. Tricks! There's no depth. It is shallow.
Wyman!
Yes, Miss Gleason.
Please come here.
But I'm talking to Mr. Evans.
I was just leaving, Miss Gleason.
Mr. Evans, if you'll just wait, we'll talk about the Willoughby picture.
I don't think I want it now.
But, Mr. Evans, surely you don't think Wyman knows anything
about... I don't know, Miss Gleason. You seem to hit the nail on the head. Painting is shallow. Good day, Miss Gleason.
Wyman, how dare you?
Well, I only did what I felt was right, Miss Gleason.
You meddling idiot. I've had enough of this. You come with me.
But, Miss Gleason...
Go on, go to Mr. Temple's office.
Yes, ma'am.
How dare you criticize a painter like Willoughby?
He? But he is not a good painter.
What do you know about it?
I know he's not good, and he doesn't feel what he paints.
Miss Gleason.
I've got to talk to you, Mr. Temple, about Wyman.
Wyman? Oh, not again.
Please, Mr. Temple, I did nothing.
He did nothing but keep Mr. Evans from buying the Willoughby.
Oh, ridiculous. Mr. Evans wouldn't listen to what Wyman has to say.
But he did. He knew what I was trying to say.
Mr. Temple, Wyman has made me look ridiculous for the last time. This is the last straw. I'll go to the board.
No, Miss Gleason,
I'll not put up with it. And the board won't like to hear that the Willoughby hasn't been sold because this fool...
Miss Gleason, remember there's an exhibition of Willoughby's paintings tomorrow. We have enough to do without bothering...
Either this man is discharged or I'll resign and tell the board why. You seem to forget this is a business, Mr. Temple.
Are you worried about business or your own feelings, Miss Gleason?
Mr. Temple, I warned you. I'm going to the board.
Oh, wait. Wait a minute. Wyman.
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, but I'm afraid Miss Gleason is right. We'll have your check for you this afternoon. You were warned several times.
I know, Mr. Temple. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Temple.
It was a distinct pleasure, Miss Gleason. Now, both of you leave me alone. I'm busy.
You had this coming, Wyman.
You think I care about the job, don't you? But I don't. I only care... But... Where is it?
Where is what? What's the matter with you?
The Van Gogh. The one I hung there.
You? You hung that cheap print?
What did you do with him? Where is it? What did you do with it?
I had it put in the basement.
You destroyed it. You killed Vincent. You and people like you. You laugh. You won't understand what a great man is trying to say with his art. You killed Vincent, and now you want to kill me because I understand. But you can't, and you won't. I will kill you first.
Martin! Samuel, come here, quickly.
You killed him because you couldn't understand him. You killed
him. Martin! Samuel!
I will kill you.
Get him out of here. He's crazy. Get him out! That's all there is to it, Mr. Stone.
Mm-hmm. That's all, but what happens now?
How do you mean?
Well, to Wyman. You call him a lunatic, you know, maybe he's not. Maybe he's just sick, but he can be cured by sympathy and understanding. Why don't you try those, Miss Gleason?
I don't care to discuss it anymore.
Just a minute. You know what he does?
No, and I care less.
He paints.
He paints?
Yes, every night. His room is filled with paintings he did because they made him feel good.
Masterpieces.
I don't know. I guess not, but that's not the point.
What is the point, Mr. Stone?
The point is he was lonely, and he made a world of his own, and he lived in it. He did those paintings because they were his only expression. They took him out of a bitter and unfeeling world that rushed past him too fast for him to share in it. And maybe he's right, Miss Gleason. Maybe we did kill men like Van Gogh because we didn't understand or didn't want to. Admit just once that you understand and like something different. You've set yourself apart. You're a curiosity.
You're as mad as he is.
Oh. Well, thank you, Miss Gleason. I think that's the nicest thing anyone ever said to me. Good night. Oh, sure, it did me a lot of good to tell Miss Gleason off. It did Alfred Wyman a lot of good, too, but not much. I had to go back to his rooming house to tell him that he was mad and the rest of us was sane. I went up the stairs, but when I knocked at his door...
You're looking for Wyman?
Yes, I am. He's here, isn't he?
Not much, he ain't. I put him out.
You what?
Put him out.
When?
Oh, about an hour ago. You a friend of his?
Yes, I am. Why did you put him out?
I'll show you. Nearly burned down my house, he did. Look at this room. I ain't gonna get the smell out for days.
He burned everything.
Like as not, he'd have had us all roasted in our beds if I didn't smell the stink this stuff was making.
All of his brushes, his paints, his canvases. Why? Did he say why?
Mister, if you're a friend of his, you'll go after him with a rope.
I asked you why he did this. Did he say?
Sure. He said it was a joke, that it was going to be a big joke. And then I chased him out.
Joke? What did he mean? Could you understand what he meant?
Yeah, it's 2 in the morning. Even if it wasn't, I couldn't make out what that loony was talking about.
Which way did he go?
Oh, up the street. He took something with him.
Never mind that. Do you know where he might be?
You know, Miss Gleason?
Gleason, yes. Why?
Well, he might have gone to see her. Because he said the joke was going to be on her.
I got to a telephone fast, found Miss Gleason's number, and called it.
Hello?
Miss Gleason?
Yes? Who's that?
Stone, Randy Stone.
What? Mr. Stone, I'd like to know...
Just a moment, listen to me. Are you all right?
Beyond the fact that I'm rapidly growing to hate you, I am all right, yes. Now, will you please...
Please listen to me. I can't find Wyman.
Isn't that too bad?
I'm trying to tell you, he might be on his way to see you.
See me? Why?
Well, I don't know, but if he shows up there,
you... won't get past the clerk downstairs.
Well, keep your door locked.
I usually do, and I look under the bed.
Please, Miss Gleason, this is serious, or it might be...
Are you trying to say that ridiculous old fool will try to harm me?
Yes. If you want it straight, yes. Did you hear me?
I certainly did, and I think it's nonsense. Now I'm going to hang up.
Miss Gleason...
I'm going to hang up, but before I do, there's one more thing. Please make a determined effort to live your life without me. Goodbye.
That click in the receiver was very final, and it made me feel a little foolish. After all, what could Alfred Wyman do? Killer? I didn't know, but... what was his big joke, and when would it happen? At 3:30 in the morning, I gave up trying to find him. I went home, I fell asleep at 5:30, and I didn't wake up until after 11. And with daylight, it all seemed a little silly. But like the proverbial sore tooth, I had to bother it. I put in a call to Miss Gleason. She wasn't in her apartment. So I headed for the one place I hated to go to, the Bender Art Galleries. I had a funny feeling I'd learned something I didn't want to learn. There was a strange excitement there. People milled around, pushed together in little groups. I looked around for Miss Gleason. She wasn't there. And then I saw Charles, the night watchman. I went to him. Charles? Charles?
Yes, sir? Oh, you're the man.
Yes, that's right, last night. Look, where's Miss Gleason?
Why?
Where is she?
Miss Gleason is in the basement.
Where's Mr. Temple's office?
Right there, sir. That door.
Thank you.
Of course. We're doing all we can now, and I'll let you know. Well, goodbye.
And Mr. Temple.
Yes? Oh, who are you?
Randy Stone, Chicago Star.
Well, there's nothing I can tell you now, so please wait outside with the other newspaper man.
Why, what's happened?
Well, where were you?
Well, where's Miss Gleason? Where is...
Mr. Temple,
You!
Oh, Miss Gleason, I never thought I'd be glad to see you, but I am.
Now, what the devil is going on? Miss Gleason, did you...
Yes.
Did...
The Willoughby painting was in the basement. Someone took it there.
In the basement? The Willoughby? Mr. Temple...
Thank goodness it's been found. If it had been stolen, well, who on earth put it in the basement?
If I tell you, will you tell me what's happened around here?
Don't you know?
What's happened here?
Well, we were to exhibit Willoughby's latest painting. But when I pulled aside the drapes... Well, just a moment. This was in its place. Instead of the Willoughby, this painting was hanging. Unsigned.
Mr. Stone, you seem to know more about this than we do.
Yes, I do. Mr. Temple, a man named Alfred Wyman played a joke on you. He painted this.
Wyman?
Yeah.
That miserable... Of course. He had a key. He could get in the back way before anyone...
It was a joke on you, Miss Gleason. Willoughby in the basement...
Where is he now? Where's Wyman?
I don't know. I left word to call me in case he's located.
But his painting...
It's a harmless joke.
A joke?
Yes. He burned everything else he had. He left this for you.
Oh, excuse me. Hello?
What?
Oh, yes. Yeah, for you, Mr. Stone.
Oh, thank you. Hello. Yeah? What? Oh, all right. Thank you.
What is it, Mr. Stone?
That idiotic old man has made us a laughingstock with his daubing. He's got to be confined.
I wouldn't worry about that, Miss Gleason. He's dead.
Dead?
He killed himself. His body was found in the park this morning.
Well, I'm sorry, of course.
Yes, a bit of tears are running down your cheeks.
I had no idea he...
No, I guess not. Neither did I. Maybe you're not to blame, Miss Gleason. Maybe no one is. Maybe it was just his way of protesting against a world that gets a little smothering sometimes. If you don't mind, I'll go. I'll take this with me.
Oh, wait, Mr. Stone.
Yeah.
Why do you want that painting?
Why? I don't know.
Is it yours?
No, I guess not, but it's
well,
the
then
only
please
one...
Please, leave it. I never wanted Wyman fired.
Now everyone's going to blame me. I was only doing...
Doing what you thought was right, yeah, okay. Well, maybe you were. Let's forget it.
Well, I can't, Mr. Stone. You see, it wasn't so much the disappearance of the Willoughby that disturbed me. It was this painting.
This painting? What about it?
Well, it's great, Mr. Stone. Truly great.
Well, it was a big joke, all right. But on whom? Was it on Wyman himself? I think not. On us? Well, isn't it always? It's a joke that's been going on for years and years and will never stop. It's played 1,000 times and we never learn to dodge the gag. We never see it coming. The joke that we never appreciate the sane people until it's too late. Copy, boy.
Vincent van Gogh figuring in tonight's story with Randy Stone as he walked the night beat in a story called Vincent and the Painter from June 19th, 1950. Now we have an accounting. An evening of the score, if not the ledger, in a story from The Whistler. It's next. You're listening to Old Time Radio Drama. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.